the festival of joy and inspiration. So in a short while from now, we are going to begin with the main discourse titled Mera Bharat Mahan, the glories of being an Indian. Just before beginning, we would like to briefly introduce today's guest speaker. His name is Gauranga Prabhu. So as such, he needs no introduction because as he is famous amongst the devotees all over the world. But with his kind permission, I would like to say a few words about his introduction. Born in 1971 in a devout South Indian family, he graduated from IIT Powai in metallurgical engineering in 1993. After a small stint at Kirloskar's, inspired by timeless
Hare Krishna. Excuse us for the interruption. So, after graduating from IIT Powai, after a small stint at Kirloskar's, inspired with the timeless Vedic wisdom of Bhagavad Gita, he decided to dedicate his life full-time to preach the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So, since then, he has been preaching practically all over the world this message of Bhagavad Gita. His seminars on Bhagavad Gita amongst all congregation members are widely appreciated. He has been famous for his workshop, personality development workshop, in various jails of India. Also, he has been counseling and giving sessions on stress management during all various organizations, cooperative organizations and companies to senior management levels. Probably you must have seen, many of you have seen on television, he has been the instrument to deliver this message to billions of people all over India and throughout the world through Star TV. You have seen Atma serial daily morning. There is a half an hour session on Bhagavad Gita. So he has kindly devoted his time for preaching during through that session. Currently, he is on the presidential board of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir situated in Girgaon Chowpatti. So with this small introduction, I would like to request His Grace Radhesham Prabhu to add few words. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So Gauranga Prabhu is a multifaceted personality. When we were in IIT together, way back in 91-92, during the time, I've been seeing him from his early days of his Krishna consciousness. We used to go to the classes together. After he joined, in his Kirloskar days, we were staying together. We were roommates, living in Pune together, going to our companies. When he joined Chowpatti Temple, he has been specializing practically in every department. He has been a head of the kitchen department. He has been head of the deity department. He has been head of preaching department, college preaching, congregation preaching. There is not one service that he has not done. He has played mridangam, he has played kartar, he has played harmonium. So you will see that he has a hand in practically everything. And most importantly, he is assisting His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj in the activities of Chowpatti Temple. He is a very confidential servant of Maharaj. Once in my early days in Pune, I was telling him that you also come here, we both will run Pune Temple together. So, of course, naturally he would not have agreed, as you know. Then I even threatened him that I'll go to Maharaj directly and tell him to send you to Pune. So, but he was telling me that I want to assist Maharaj. Maharaj has so many things to do in Chowpatti. So Maharaj has a lot of trust in him and gives him many personal instructions. So, although we were separated geographically in Bombay and Pune, we have been meeting several times together, and his association has been of immense joy and pleasure for me, because there are so many things that he has learned in the course of the years in company of Maharaj that I come to know from him, and I'm very thankful to him. He used to come in those days once in a year. Last 1 or 2 years he didn't come. He became too preoccupied traveling all over India as well as abroad. So again I reminded him, so he's here with us, and we are going to have him for coming 3 days. today, tomorrow and after. So it's a very great opportunity for all of us to join all these programs. And as I was telling you, he is a speaker who can be appreciated by all kinds of audience. You'll find those who are business people, Hindi speaking, they appreciate his Hindi so much. At the same time, when he goes to colleges, the students appreciate his lecture so much. And he gives a seminar on corporate athlete in the companies, which is attended by the top class managers in companies for 2 or 3 days. So in this way, he caters to the needs of all kinds of audience. And that is why he is also a star plus star, where he speaks for millions of people. So we are very fortunate to have him here with us today. Along with him, we have Akinchan Krishna Prabhu and also Ram Keshav Prabhu from Montreal, who is here with us. Let us welcome all these devotees to Sri Radha Kunj Bihari Temple by loudly chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Bol, Hare Bol, Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna. So on behalf of all of us, I would request His Grace Radhesham Prabhu to kindly garland His Grace Gaurang Prabhu. Arivo! Arivo!
Thank you, Radhesham Prabhu, for your kind words. And thank you all for this kind welcome. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayet Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishthiki Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha Nanda Gopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshuronmilitam Yenam Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha Panchatatvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यम् नमामि भक्तशक्तिकाम्। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांता श्री राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी श्री राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
हरे कृष्णा। स्मॉल रिक्वेस्ट, माताजी हु आर सेटिंग, वी आर काइंडली रिक्वेस्टेड टू गो लिटिल बैक बिकॉज देर इज लॉट ऑफ स्पेस बिहाइंड बिकॉज देर इज अ शॉर्टेज ऑफ स्पेस एंड ऑल प्रभुजी इज काइंडली कम फॉरवर्ड, देर इज लॉट ऑफ स्पेस हियर। सो स्मॉल रिक्वेस्ट, विदाउट डिस्टर्बिंग काइंडली कम फॉरवर्ड। हरे कृष्ण।
सो समवन इज ऑपरेटिंग, ओके फाइन। सो थैंक यू ऑल फॉर योर kind invitation, and I would specially like to thank His Grace Radhesham Prabhu for inviting me for this session, and He has spoken many kind words about me. That is the nature of a devotee. But one thing He mentioned, that He wanted me to come here, but I can see that because of not coming, so much has happened. And I can say that the youth preaching efforts, which are being spearheaded by Radhesham Prabhu and his team of preachers here at Pune, is definitely amongst the best in the whole world. I have traveled to ISKCON temples in many countries of the world, in practically most of the major temples in India, and I can say with lot of conviction and faith that this is the most successful youth preaching effort, which is showing a wonderful example to the whole of ISKCON about how the young educated student community can be trained in Krishna consciousness. So I'm especially grateful to Radhesham Prabhu, who has been a source of inspiration for all of us in youth preaching in Bombay, and we are following in their footsteps, and therefore all of you especially are very fortunate that you have an opportunity to get connected to this fantastic youth preaching effort here at Pune. And I hope that this effort continues and hundreds and thousands of students continue to benefit. So I would like to express my appreciation for Radhesham Prabhu's wonderful contribution along with his team here by loudly chanting Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. So today I have chosen a topic which I spoke in Prerna a few months back in Bombay. The topic was inspired when I was in US, because when I went there I realized that the kind of opportunity we have in India is something we take for granted. And therefore, I designed a seminar based on this. Many times, we do not realize the wonderful opportunity we have when we have it, and we realize it when we don't have it. So So most of the Indians, especially the student community, they are very eager to go abroad. And when I say abroad, then mostly it is one or two countries of the world. Nobody wants to go to Africa for higher studies, right? Nobody wants to go to the Sahara Desert for higher studies. So people are eager to go to America, to Europe, to various other countries and settle down there, make money. That's fine. But one must also appreciate the facilities we have here, especially if we are interested in spiritual life. So there was a slogan some years back to this effect, Mera Bharat Mahan. So I just remembered that and it was catchy. And amazingly, this topic created so much of hype in Bombay. It's very difficult to catch attention of people in Bombay because there are so many distractions. And if you remember, there was this big flood in Bombay this year, in the month of August. And the same week, I think July or August, So this major catastrophe happened on Tuesday or Wednesday, and this prerna was on Saturday. And practically all the trains were paralyzed. 40 to 50% of the trains were destroyed. For 2 or 3 days, the local trains were not running. And only on Saturday morning, the local train started running, and that too, only 20 to 30%. Highly crowded, very late. And all of us were in double mind what to do. Should we go ahead with the prayer or cancel it? And there was a lot of debate going on. And the biggest question was coming from the kitchen department. How much to cook for? And none of us had any idea. So finally we decided to cook for 400 or 500 people. But then as the festival started, people were, by the time it was 7 o'clock, the hall was packed. And then surprisingly that evening we had the biggest crowd we had so far in any of the prerna festivals apart from the special ones. And we landed up with 1200 boys that evening. And that too on that weekend where this major catastrophe which had paralyzed Bombay city. So I could understand from this response that the Indian youth want to hear this, that yes, there is something great about this place. And anyone can convince me about this, I'm interested to hear. Otherwise, there are so many topics we had, and so many other different speakers and different scenarios and everything, but this kind of response was mainly for this topic. So I've divided this topic into 4 sections. And first is what is Mahan, and then I discuss what exactly is the definition. You keep going ahead as I'm speaking. And the second part is, why is Bharat Mahan? And then third is very interesting, why are the problems in Bharat Mahan? And the fourth is, how can we experience Mera Bharat Mahan? So actually I divided this in 2 parts. So we had Mera Bharat Mahan part 1 and then part 2. Because in 1 hour we are not able to cover too much. So we'll see. We may not be able to cover all the 4 topics, but whatever we can cover in this 1 hour, we'll try to cover it. So I began with a story in that seminar. I mentioned about how there was this Western traveler. And people in the West are often intrigued by India. They're not able to understand what this India is all about. It's a mystery to them. They come here for some mystical experience. So one German, he was traveling in India. And he was visiting one of the Udupi restaurants in Bombay. He wanted to have an experience, an authentic experience of what Indian food is. So he sat down in this Udupi restaurant and he was served on banana leaf. the food. And generally nobody in the West has this experience of eating on a leaf. So he was served different items. So he had the idli, he had the dosa, he had all this vada and everything. He finished all of it. And then he started eating the banana leaf also. Because nobody told him what is what. He just assumed this is also part of the food. So he finished the food, went to pay the bill. So the manager said, "So how was the food?" And this fellow said, "Food was good. The salad was little stiff." So many people who visit India, they find various ways of living, eating, dressing, all very mysterious. And this is practically the only country in the whole world where there is such variety, practically from east to west, north to south. It is like 50 countries staying together, where you can be in one room and each one speaks a different language, but they are all Indian. They all have a different choice of favorite food, but they are all belonging to the same place. So this is very, very unique in itself. But apart from these other characteristics of what is special about India, I would just like to focus on one particular aspect when we say Mahan. Otherwise, if you go to the internet, there are so many sites available which describe, okay, these are the reasons why India is great, you know, this is why so many different literatures were here, chess was originated here, zero originated in India, and this is a typical list you will find of what is so special about India. But that is not exactly the focus of today's talk. All of those reasons may be there, but we are going to focus very specific on one particular angle. And therefore, I'll take the first topic of what is Mahan. If I'm saying Mera Bharat Mahan, so what does this Mahan mean? So the first aspect of Mahan is to take shelter of Mahan. And Bhagavad Gita says, Mahatmanastumam partha daivim prakriti maashrita bhajantananya manasa gyatva bhutadim avyayam. One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord Krishna, he is considered to be a Mahatma. So therefore, Mahan means to take shelter of Mahan, to take shelter of the great, the supreme great Krishna. And the second aspect of Mahan is to conquer over the biggest problems of life. And those problems are birth, old age, disease and death. And therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita only, Mamupetya punarjanma dukkhalayam ashashvatam na apnuvanti mahatmana samsiddhim paramam gatam. So the definition of great problems are given, that janma mrityu jara vyadhi, and this material world is being described as dukkhalayam ashashvatam. And he says the great soul Mahatmas conquer over these problems. So when I say Mahan, then it is in context with the supreme absolute truth and the supreme powerful problems which face mankind. So therefore, one who takes shelter of the supreme to conquer over these greater problems, that endeavor is actually something great, something Mahan. So therefore, this is the definition of Mahan based on which we will continue our talk. Otherwise, so many people can claim so many factors and parameters as the basis for being Mahan. But the criteria we are choosing of what is Mahan is the Supreme Lord, and by taking his shelter, conquering over the great problems. If you engage in this endeavor, that is considered great. So the second point which I take is, why is Bharat Mahan? Why is India considered to be great? And if you see, so many problems, so people may say, okay, come on, we have engaged in so many different activities and now India is so famous for sending software engineers all over the world. I went to Seattle and I did a seminar at Microsoft, and the people were telling me there that in Seattle, in the Microsoft, there are 50,000 Indians who are employed. 50. And I was asking, what is the reason for so many Indians? And one of them was giving me a very interesting reason. He said that the software industry is targeting Indians a lot because of certain reasons. In software industry, when you are dealing with software related problems, the computer comes up with all kinds of strange problems and you need a lot of patience to deal with it. When you are least expecting any problem, sometime that problem will come. And then for no reason. And then you have to keep checking and debugging and go back. And it really tests your patience. So therefore you need a taste for patiently solving problem. And he said the kind of lifestyle which people have in India, right from childhood, life is full with problems. In so many situations, in spite of having so much of technology and everything, but still the way India is, even if you bring the latest technology, best technology, there are certain problems you can never solve here. You will have the most sophisticated fan in the railway train, but it will not work. You have booked your bogey, you have booked your ticket and everything, you have your confirmed seat, you sit there, you see a very nice shining fan, you switch on, nothing happens. You switch on, off, nothing happens. And it's a common scenario. But when this happens, every Indian knows what to do with it. They take out their comb. Hair comb. And they try to work on that. Nobody has taken a seminar on what to do. But everyone knows what to do with it. Right? So that means we are used to the fact that situations will come up which are unpredictable. But when something unpredictable happens, we don't get bewildered. We try to take out some solution out of it and go on fighting till the end. So the tap is there, but water won't come. Or some water will go on leaking. So everyone knows how to deal with it, how to do, you know. Sometimes so many homes nowadays have sophisticated taps. So you do this way, water comes from below, you do this way, shower comes, and many times you do the wrong way and you get a bath untimely. And you can't do anything about it. But when anything goes wrong, then we have our innovative ways of trying to solve it. So therefore, the West is so sophisticated and everything is so well organized, everything works the way it should. Everything moves the way it should as far as technology is concerned, facilities are concerned, as far as toilets are concerned, electricity, everything just moves like clockwork precision. Life is just too good, too systematic, too organized. Any address in United States is available on the internet. You have to go from point A to point B, just type in, you'll get the whole map. Every signboard and every number on a house will be where it should be. So these are very unimaginable things for us. So you can go from one city to another city without asking a single question to anyone about address, which is practically impossible to imagine here. Right? Even if you don't have definite address, you just take a chance saying that we'll meet so many people on the way, and you know, if someone says go this way, then we don't immediately follow. We know that we have to ask at least 6 people and then take the average of all that and go in a direction according to that. So this is taken for granted. But things are so organized in the West that they can't imagine something like that. Everything is as it should be. So when computer comes up with all kinds of strange problems, it really tests your patience. And so when you have spent your whole life where everything works just the way it should, so your ability to deal with these kind of sudden, strange, spontaneously complex situations goes down. Whereas for Indian, it is no problem. Problems are coming up from the computer. Everyone is getting bewildered. And he's saying, no problem, at least AC is on here. I can sit and go on working. So he goes on working overtime, overtime, overtime. And therefore, if any American employer has a choice between an American, Chinese and Indian, first choice he will take Indian. And then he'll go for Chinese. Because China also sufficient problems are there. And then only he'll go for this. And this is what the employees at Microsoft told me. So therefore, this is one of the reasons, because of the kind of lifestyle which all of us are dealing with, because of highly competitive struggle we are having throughout our whole lives, even leading our regular lives, that makes it very conducive for a career in software engineering. Sorry.
Sorry for interruption. Actually, there are about 80 devotees waiting outside for the space. So we request all the devotees to move as much as possible forward and kindly give them space. Sorry for interruption. Hare Krishna.
This is also a very good problem that so many people are coming. Right, Ramkeshwa Prabhu? How often do you get to see a crowd of young boys like this? So many temples all over the world, there are so many deities. And in many temples, the number of deities on the altar is more than the number of people in the temple. Many times it happens like that because things are so difficult. So here it is a very good sign that people are waiting outside to come in and attend the program. So therefore, I'll go to the next part. Like I was just mentioning about problems in life, birth, old age, disease and death. So I give the example of death, that ultimately you may solve various problems in life, you may achieve various successes in life, but all your relative successes throughout your whole life are finished at one stroke by the hammer of death. So death is that phenomena which ultimately puts to failure all of your lifelong successes. So therefore, unless you find a solution to death, life really is not a success at all. Therefore, you may struggle and strive your whole life finding the formula of how to successfully make money, how to successfully become prime minister, how to successfully manage a family, how to successfully do this, do that. But all your success formula will ultimately be finished when death comes. So therefore, if anyone has a formula to conquer death, that is something which is really a success formula. I give the example of this game which we used to play as children, Snake and Ladder. You have played? It's not there on the board. Snake and Ladder game. You know, you in Hindi used to call Saap Siri. So you go on 1, 2, 3, 4 and then there is a ladder, you go up, and then you go ahead, and then some more ladder is there, and then some small snakes come, you go down, again go up. So in the way you go on like this, and you reach the last. And when you reach the last, there is one big snake who is sitting on the last part with his mouth open. And you enter into that, and it brings you all the way, you, straight at the beginning. So that final snake of death is most deadly. And nobody can escape that. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, punarapi janani jathare shayanam. So this kind of repeated birth and death continues. But in modern society, people are so oblivious to this problem. So therefore, if you can find a solution to this, this is the greatest problem of life. By taking shelter of the Supreme Great, that really is something great. And we will demonstrate in this next section, why is Bharat Mahan, that this solution can be most easily effected in this country. And I will present to you in a certain format by explaining to you what is the definition of culture. So let us see. Now you have to follow through this whole discussion very carefully and pay attention to what I am mentioning, because all of you have heard this word culture, you have discussed what is culture, but I am presenting to you the whole concept of culture in a little different and unique way, which you will appreciate, and it will really reveal the exact logic of what culture is. Because I realize most people don't know what is culture. They just speak about culture, they just discuss about culture, but they have a totally wrong notion of what culture is. So I begin by explaining that in any endeavor, there are three things. The first aspect of any endeavor is the goal. We have to achieve a certain goal. The second aspect is we need to follow a process to achieve that goal. And the third is you need a favorable, conducive environment to follow the process so that you can achieve the goal. These are the three aspects of any endeavor: the goal, the process, and the environment. And I'll give you some examples for this. For example, if somebody is an athlete, and he wants a gold medal. Suppose that is my goal, to achieve gold medal. So there was this athlete, her name was Nadia Comaneci, and she was very famous. She won so many gold medals. That was her goal from her childhood. Her parents trained her from very childhood to reach that goal, that when you are in your teenage years, you must get gold medal. So to achieve that goal, she had to follow the process of being trained. So you go through training under a coach, you go through training under athletics coach, under the gymnasts, and then that process of training will help you reach the goal. But along with the process, you also need something which is a favorable environment. What you eat, whom you associate with, what kind of attitudes you develop, and that is very important. And although she was a child, but from her childhood she never was allowed to eat ice creams. And that is a major renunciation for a child. So no cakes, no ice creams. Why? Because that was not conducive for her to follow the process of being a gymnast. To be a gymnast, you need to be very slim. You can't be overweight and still manage to do all kinds of exercises. It's not possible. And then you have to wear a certain kind of dress when you are in the gymnastics competition. So you can't wear suit and tie and coat and then come in the arena and say, I will do somersault. That's not allowed. So a certain kind of dress, food, all of this is part of the favorable environment to follow the process to reach a goal. Or for example, if somebody wants to be a big businessman like Bill Gates, from his childhood, from his teen years, he was just constantly with computers. He had that environment. He had a goal that I want to be a millionaire. And he knew the process is I have to invent something, and that has to do something with computers. But the most important was the environment. He was always surrounded by computers. In fact, in his school, the school subscribed to certain number of hours of computer time for the whole school. But he alone, along with his friend, used up all that time. That was the kind of addiction he had. But that environment which he received, a favorable environment where he was surrounded by books of computers, he was surrounded with computers and all the facility was there, that was so important. If you must have known that previously, in the British times, these rich businessmen, they would do business under a tree. And what a vriksha, right? So what is known in English as banyan tree. So they would do under this banyan tree. Why? Because there was a feeling that a banyan tree is considered to be very auspicious. Bargat ka ped. It is considered to be auspicious, and any customer comes under that tree, he becomes favorably inclined to buy. And that was the kind of mood which they had. So therefore all of these businessmen, they would bring their stuff to sell and sit and specifically choose in a village where this tree would be and sit under that tree. And because they found that favorable for their business, so ultimately their goal was to make money. They had the process of buying and selling, but they were looking for favorable environment. And because businessmen and those who are tradesmen in Hindi are known as baniya, right? That's the name used, baniya. Therefore, that tree came to be known as banyan tree. So the banyan tree comes from the word baniya. Baniyo ka ped. That was a favorite of the baniyas. Therefore, it is known as banyan. So they were searching for favorable environment. Or someone wants to be a scientist like Einstein. The story of Einstein or one of his other colleagues, that when they would go to school, he would practically sit in the last bench and be totally disinterested in any of the study. Why? Because even before the teacher wrote on the board, he already knew it. So he was just finding the whole syllabus too boring. So the teacher wrote a letter to his mother, "Please don't send your son to school. He is distracting all the other boys because he is sitting on the last bench and going to sleep and inspiring others to go to sleep. So better don't send him." So one of these days he just opened his eyes and he saw that on the board there were some homework written, and he found the problems interesting. He wrote those. He went and came next day and told the teacher, "I finished the homework. Take this." Teacher said, "I never gave homework." He said, "Why? I saw so many problems on the board yesterday. What was that?" The teacher said, "You solved that?" He said, "Yes, here is it, your homework." The teacher said, "That was not homework. Those were the greatest unsolved problems in physics in history, which was on the board." And that was the first time he found it interesting. So that was the kind of person he was. So he would always surround himself with friends who were inclined similarly. And therefore, it is described that even when he registered for one college for doing honors in mathematics, he told his friend to attend classes regularly, and he would spend most of his time doing other research. And just before exam, he would tell his friends, "Bring your notes," and then he would see what was going on and then pass the exam. So this is not to inspire you to do like that. Right? Some of you may start thinking, "I should also become Einstein now." So Einstein was already like that, so he could do that, but by doing that, you will not become Einstein. So he had a certain environment, certain people whom he was associating with, books he would go through. And therefore, because of following that trend, he ultimately achieved his goal of becoming one of the most brilliant scientists ever. If someone even wants to be in the entertainment industry, so many people come to Bombay every month to become Amitabh Bachchan. So if that is my goal, I want to become actor. So if I have to become actor, I have to follow a certain process. What is that process? I should meet famous directors, producers, forget them, meet their secretaries and their secretaries, servant of the servant of the servant. And that is what people do. They keep meeting all these contacts and trying to find out how they can get an entry. So that is the process. There is a certain process. And for following that process, you need a favorable environment. That means if I am a prospective actor, I need to dress in a certain way. I can't wear dhoti and kurta and go to some producer and director and say, "Hari bol." Say, "What bol?" "That I want to become actor." He said, "Get lost. Who are you? And what is this strange dress you are wearing?" So I need to dress like a hero, I need to speak like a hero, act like a hero. I can't shave my head and go and say that, you know, you have to accept me in this hairstyle. So the hair has to be done in a certain way. All the entire thing has to be favorable for following the process so that I get what I'm looking for. So therefore, these three things follow in sequence. But out of the three, the first thing is goal. You must have a specific goal. To achieve that goal, you will have a specific process. And for facilitating that process, a certain environment will be conducive. Even if someone wants to be a criminal, like for example, the police raided the Dagdi Chawl in Lower Parel, which was the headquarters of one of the very famous gangsters. And they found one trunk filled with letters. And these were letters written by young boys from Maharashtra to this gang leader. They were all saying that I am 18-year-old boy, unemployed. I want to make my career in crime. I want to join your gang. What is the prerequisite for doing that? I will be very eager to be trained by you and be very submissive, do whatever you say. And my previous qualifications are as follows. I have done so many pickpockets. I have hit so many people. I participated in the riots. I did this, I did that. Please consider my application favorably. And it was not one or two, but a whole trunk full with these letters. That means there are so many people who are eager to become criminal. That is their goal. The goal is to become criminal. You have to follow a certain process. And then a certain environment becomes conducive for that. So therefore, the question is, the definition of culture is therefore a favorable environment which facilitates the process to achieve a certain goal. That is culture. So depending on my goal, I will find a certain culture favorable. An environment, a favorable environment, that is the most important principle, which facilitates the process to reach a certain goal or achieve a certain goal. So therefore, according to my understanding here, which I have just mentioned about Mera Bharat Mahan or what is Mahan, if my goal is to be free from the cycle of birth and death, if my goal is to conquer death, which is the Mahan problem of life, if my goal is to take shelter of Krishna, if my goal is absolutely spiritual, then for that a certain process is required. And what is that process? Sixth canto Bhagavatam describes, Esha Prakriti Sangena Purushasya Viparyaya Asitsana Evana Chirat Isha Sangat Vilayate. The process is that you follow Isha Sangat Vilayate, that somehow get connected with Krishna in some way. And the process is association with the Supreme, with Mahan, with Krishna. And this association is possible in five ways. Chanting, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping deity, and visiting holy places. Isha Sangha, or association with Krishna, is manifest in these five ways. So anyone who is lost in this world, entrapped in sense gratification, totally oblivious of the goal of life, has no idea about spiritual goals, and I want to transform and change my life from materialistic hedonism to spiritual goals, then I have to get connected to one of these five processes strongly. And for those whose lives have been transformed and who are already practicing devotees in this audience, you will appreciate that our life was going in a certain direction and our life changed because we came in contact with one of these five at least. And then gradually other things manifested. So this association, this process consists of these five. The process is giving association of Krishna. So when you associate with Krishna, then finally you reach your goal of reaching Krishna and conquering over death. So therefore, you have the goal, you have the process. To achieve this goal of conquering over death and achieving Krishna, we follow the process of hearing, chanting, associating, worshipping deity and visiting holy places. And we need a favorable environment for this process. So therefore, bhakti can be practiced in any corner of the world. Bhakti can be practiced in any part of the universe because bhakti is supremely independent. But the process itself is supremely independent. But what does culture mean? Culture means a favorable environment. So therefore, definitely the goal can be achieved by following the process of bhakti in any corner of the universe. But as far as favorable environment is concerned for practicing this process to achieve this goal of Krishna, to achieve the goal of conquest over death, according to the testimony of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the great sages, in the 14 planetary systems, there is only one place which is most favorable. There is only one place which creates the most favorable environment and culture to follow this process of bhakti to achieve the goal of Krishna. And this is the testimony of denizens of the heavenly planets. This is the testimony of people of this planet. And this is the testimony of those in the lower planets. This is what is recorded in Bhagavatam, in the Puranas, in all the scriptures, without a doubt, that you can practice bhakti anywhere. But the most favorable environment for practicing bhakti is available only on one tract of land in the 14 planetary systems. And that is, which place? Bharat, India. And therefore, because this facility is available in India, the most favorable environment is available here in India for practice of bhakti. Therefore, because it helps us to achieve the Mahan goal, therefore, Mera Bharat Mahan. Therefore, this land is great. Because the most conducive, favorable environment for the practice of bhakti is available in this tract of land. Otherwise, if you see other things, it is not so Mahan. Right? If you say that in terms of production, in terms of GDP, in terms of technology available, in terms of public utility facilities, we are way backward. There is no comparison. It will take us, we may never be able to catch up also with most countries of the world. But when I say Mera Bharat Mahan, it is exclusively with only one context. Bhakti. And if that is your goal, if Krishna is your goal and conquest over death is your goal and your process of bhakti is to be followed, then there is no competition in all the 14 planetary systems as far as what is the best place. And that is India. And no other place will also come anywhere near. Therefore, those who are taken spiritual goals in their lives will start appreciating this land. Otherwise, there are so many problems. And that is the next topic, that's what I said. Why are problems in Bharat Mahan? So I'm not denying that. But there is also historical reasons for that which we may not have time to discuss in today's discussion. But the point to be appreciated is this, my dear friends, that if you have decided that Krishna consciousness is my priority, then you will not find a better place to practice it than this. Therefore, appreciate the facility which you have. Otherwise, if you see other things, then you will always be dissatisfied. And one person went to the extent of saying that, you know, so many problems are there in India because according to Vastu, our land is covered by water on three sides. There is ocean on all the three sides and Himalaya on north. That is a big problem. And that is why economically we are not developing. So if somehow we are able to remove those oceans, then everything will be solved. That is his analysis. Is that practically possible? Saying, ultimately I have realized it is all Vastu problem only. Whole India's problem is because according to Vastu it is not properly arranged. So many people will come with so many brilliant ideas of what the problems are and what the solutions are, but we are not going into that. We agree there are problems. We agree we are way backward in so many ways. But here we are talking of Mahan in terms of only one thing. If you say Krishna is my goal, then there is absolutely no discussion. There is no match at all. It is walkover. That this is the land to practice bhakti, the kind of environment which is favorable. And I'll prove it in my last part of today's presentation. And let us see in what way. First of all, the five processes I will take, and I will see how India is so suited for this. First is chanting. And the demigods in the fifth canto are glorifying. Nayatra narayana pada pankaja smriti pramushta atishaya indriya utsavat. And they are saying that in the land of India, it is so conducive to practice chanting of the holy names. And in the heavenly planets also, it is so difficult. Why? Because atishaya indriya utsavat, there is excessive sense gratification. Utsav means festival. In heavenly planets, there is daily festival of sense gratification. That is not to inspire you to go there. That is to mention how the heavenly demigods are saying, it is so difficult to chant the holy names. Right? Just chanting here in the midst of devotees is so difficult. So can you imagine if you are sitting and chanting and 10 beautiful apsaras are dancing around you? What will you chant? Their holy names. It is not possible to concentrate on the Lord's holy name in this environment. So holy name is eternal, powerful, but if environment is like that, how you will chant? It's not possible. And you go to the lower planets, you can't be chanting holy names in the Yamalokas. It is very difficult. So therefore this middle planetary system is best, and even in that, the land of Bharat is considered best. And you see this, practically you just cannot miss Krishna in India. You cannot avoid Krishna, you cannot avoid God in India, chanting the names, because half the people's names are something to do with Krishna or Ram. You open telephone directory, you will see Ramakrishna, Ramakanta, Ramakant, Ram, 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 so many. Krishna Murti, Krishna Gopal, Krishna this, so many names are connected with Krishna or Ram. Is it not? So even if you just go through the names, you will find half are, and if you go to shops, half the shops' names are something to do with God. Right? Next to our temple, there is one restaurant and beer bar, Sudama Palace. You know? Poor Sudama. He went to Dwarka with some other motive. And now they are running a beer bar in his name. But even somehow that name is there. You can't avoid that name. If you go to Smoke Bidi, there is Ganesh Bidi. I don't know why they choose such names, but somehow they just can't live without putting God's name somewhere. Whether it is demigod's name, Supreme Lord's name, some name or the other will come which is spiritually connected. That is the speciality of this place. So you can't avoid it. Second is hearing. As far as Bhagavatam is concerned, it is described here, Nayatra Vaikuntha Katha Sudapaga न साधवो भागवतस्तदाश्रय न यत्र यज्ञेश मख महोत्सवा सुरेश लोकोपि न वै स सेव्यताम्. दिस वर्स सेज न यत्र वैकुंठ कथा सुधापगा दैट वेर द ब्यूटिफुल रिवर्स ऑफ कृष्ण कथा हरिकथा डज नॉट फ्लो न साधवो भागवतस्तदाश्रय वेर डिवोटीज ऑफ कृष्णा डू नॉट रिसाइड न यत्र यज्ञेश मख महोत्सव वेर ग्लोरियस फेस्टिवल्स ग्लोरिफाइंग कृष्णा आर नॉट कंडक्टेड सुरेश लोकोपि न वै स सेव्यताम. इट इज नॉट वर्थ स्टेइंग इन सच अ प्लेस वेर दीज थिंग्स डू नॉट हैपन. हु इज सेइंग दिस? द डेमीगॉड्स. द डेमीगॉड्स फ्रॉम हेवनली प्लैनेट्स आर सेइंग सुरेश लोकोपि वी आर बोर्ड इन हेवन बिकॉज दीज काइंड ऑफ फेसिलिटीज आर नॉट अवेलेबल. सो देयरफॉर भागवतम. And in India, even if you are not a believer in Bhagavatam, believer in Gita, anywhere you go, there will be Bhagavat Sapta. Even if you want to eat prasad, you can sit there for some time. There will be Gita discourses, somewhere or the other. Every home has some kind of facility of keeping Mahabharat or Ramayan or Gita or Bhagavatam like that. It's common. You cannot avoid it. And in fact, like, I was in Kumbh Mela a few years back, and there was Katha going on. And there was Ram Katha going on. And the speaker was speaking on Ramayana, and hundreds of people were sitting in crowd. I'm just saying how the culture in India is such that people have some simple faith. Katha is going on, people are sitting, so many more people will come and sit. So as this Katha was going on, this one fellow got up and started walking out. And the speakers very boldly was saying, Ram Katha ke beech mein utke bahar jaoge, darwaje pe Hanuman khade rahenge, jhapad marenge. Baith jao. And that poor 2-3 villagers were, they got up, they sat down again. And from that time onwards, nobody disturbed. Now you can't imagine saying this in any other part of the world. But here, he's just making that statement and people believe and they have eagerness to hear. So that simple faith is there. They have a desire. And even in cities, when they conduct Bhagavat Sapta morning and evening, people take leave from office. So that propensity is there to sit and hear. And in fact, all this Darwin theory and other things, we read in school, right? But personally, I never understood what this Darwin theory is. Because from my childhood, I've been always chanting some mantras. And in fact, in this crowd here, how many of you are here who have chanted some mantra or gone to some temple and done some puja from childhood? Sometime or the other, raise your hand. Just see, practically everyone. And you hear about Darwin only when you are in 6th or 7th or 8th standard, right? So after so many years of chanting some mantra or doing some puja and worshipping some deity, suddenly you hear that everything, you know, started from some unicellular organism and ultimately everyone became monkey and then from monkey we came and this and that. Very difficult to take it seriously. And I remember that most students, they just mug whatever is there and they just repeat it in the exam. And before going to exam, they go to their DT and say, Ganesh ji, pass karna hai, Darwin ka paper. Which is totally contrary to Darwin's theory. And he's going with Tika and Tilak and Vibhuti and everything. Today, very important paper, Darwin theory, I have to write. So what is this here? And what is this here? How is that connected to your Darwin theory? Oh, sir. Oh, that, don't ask me. Right. So what exactly you are convinced of? No. Indian student means hodgepodge. He has only one goal, pass exam. Otherwise, no personal conviction in any of the things he is reading. Parents say, bow down here. Okay, bow down. Yahan pe agarbatti ghuma diya. Idhar ghanti maro, mar diya. And teacher said, exam ye likho, lik diya. submissive to everyone. That is a problem. But that is a good thing, because if they come to Hare Krishna also, they are submissive. And they get the right direction. So if you analyze our own life, our whole life has been like that. We were thrown around like carom board. Carom board coin. Tadak. Psh, tadak. Psh. So many people hit us in so many directions, and whole life we were moving around like in a carom board. And finally, somehow, Srila Prabhupada and his representatives came and said, okay, stop. This is what life is all about. And only after coming to Hare Krishna, I actually understood what is Darwin's theory. By reading these books, Life Comes from Life and all these, I had to go through again to understand what exactly is this theory. So actually speaking, although we claim to be students of science, none of us really were scientific in our approach to understanding science. We humbly, submissively, faithfully accepted science with total submissive spirit, accepting Newton as our Mahajan, as all the great personalities, and just follow that. That is it. So therefore, when you come in contact with Krishna consciousness and the Gita and everything, it just connects immediately. Because the basic tendency to submissively hear is there in India, amongst youth in India. Only thing is that they are misled. So therefore, as soon as the Gita comes and everything makes logical sense, the youth take to it like anything. Like I was talking to one Bengali gentleman, one boy. And I was telling him, hey, you are from Bengal, all the acharyas are from Bengal, our Gaudiya Sampradaya is from Bengal. Said, and this Gita is based on this commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Have you heard of Vishwanath Chakravarti? He said, no, I have only heard Mithun Chakravarti. I said, okay, because of the influence of media, what can be done? People have inclination, but the media has practically taken control to such an extent that if you see the next part which we are discussing, worshipping, chanting, hearing, worshipping, such facility for worship you will get in India, you will not get anywhere else. Every city has temples, not one, not two, but hundreds of temples. In Vrindavan alone, there are 5,000 Krishna temples. If you come to cities, then there are more variety available. You want to worship, you can worship anyone in India. So many facilities. Nowhere else you will find such facility to worship. All you need is a desire to worship. So therefore, the whole point is that the facility for worship is there. But all of us were also going to temples from our childhood. But none of us really were trained in the proper principles of why you are worshipping. So just imagine, all of this environment, conducive environment is there in India, but what was the problem? Nobody told us what is the goal. Nobody told us what is the process. So if only the environment is there, it doesn't help. You need to understand the goal, you need to understand the process, then you can appreciate the favorable environment. But the education system just threw away this goal. No one in any school or college learnt that the goal of life is to conquer over death and attain the spiritual world. No one told the process is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. So if goal is not there, process is not there, if only environment is there, what will you do with that environment? You don't know how to use it. You don't know whether it is conducive for what purpose. And therefore our parents were only telling us, you should go to temple, visit the temple, you should do this puja, you should do this, do that. So when you have only the culture without understanding the goal, that becomes ritual. Only when the goal is added, it becomes spiritual. Within the word spiritual, the word ritual comes. So when you take out the goal and the process and just have the culture and environment, expect people to appreciate that, it is just ritual. Only that connection is there, then only people are inspired. And therefore, because the goal of worshipping Krishna was not revealed, the process of worship was not taught, so there was a vacuum created and we need to worship someone. And who filled that vacuum? Bollywood. Who filled that vacuum? Film industry. And all these film stars became our worshipable idols. And we used to worship them like anything. I grew up in MP at a time when Amitabh Bachchan was also growing up as from demigod to supreme lord at that time. And it is a fact, the kind of feeling which people had. So the most important thing is, nowadays people worship their gods at home, but the feeling, they have given their heart to the film stars and the cricket stars. The feeling has gone there. And only the external rituals is being conducted just for some social prestige. Why? Because no one taught us exactly why we should worship Krishna. And therefore, we find this is so common. And you can imagine that people would just go, at Amitabh Bachchan's film is released means people are going like mad. First day, first show. Whole families are planning for 1 week together that on this day, all the family members have to go. So going to the film theater is like dham pilgrimage. It becomes like that. And it is a fact. We may laugh about it, but we have spent our whole life in this consciousness with a mood of awe, reverence and worship. If I chant some Bhaktivinod Thakur bhajan, even if I sing Guru Puja, people will ask for songbooks. Nobody knows. Right? So many nice bhajans of Bhaktivinod Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur. Do we know them? No. If I sing one line, you will ask, okay, bring the songbook, only then we can follow. I sing one line from some Kishore Kumar hit from the 70s and 80s. Nobody needs any book. Everyone will follow because everyone has heard it. So they say, you just sing first line, then we'll give the supply the other lines. The whole country is united. Everyone knows. If you sing on national TV, Sansara Dava, nobody knows. You sing on national TV some famous film song, the whole country knows. That means they have accepted this as a part of their heart. They have given their heart. So our heart has been captured by these idols of society. And therefore, over a period of time, we have lost that kind of mood, that feeling in worshipping Krishna. That feeling has gone here. So previously it used to be film stars, and then over a period of time cricket stars also came in. Right? And there was a billboard in Bombay. Cricket is India's latest religion and Sachin is our God. And Radhanath Swami said, actually it is not Sachin who is our God, Sachinandan is our God. But who knows Sachinandan? You know, nobody knows. Before coming to Hare Krishna, did we hear of Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? No. How many had heard of Mayapur? There used to be one film magazine called Mayapuri. That many people had heard. But who had heard of Mayapur? Navadvip? Nobody. Staying here in India, how many people had visited Vrindavan? Many had visited Lonavala and Simla and Darjeeling. And these are the places to visit. Well, Vrindavan? India mein kya? Many people don't know. You go south of India, most people don't know where is Vrindavan. So why this state of affairs? Because things over a period of time have become degraded. The goal has not been taught. So if the goal is not taught, the process is not taught, how do you expect someone to appreciate the environment and the process? If somebody doesn't know what is cricket, if somebody doesn't know how to play cricket, and you just have pads and gloves and ball and bat, everything, and they don't know what to do with it, because they don't know what the game is. So therefore, if you just have a DT, you have a bell, you have this, that, but you don't know what is the connection, then how do you expect people to take it seriously? Therefore, this is the most important principle. And then next is association with devotees. And the last is visiting holy dhams. Dham means a place where Krishna personally performed pastimes, and in that land there is spiritual radioactivity. Just like if there is a nuclear bomb exploded at Pokhran, even now after 30 years you can't go there because that energy is still there. If you go to Hiroshima, Nagasaki, you will still get affected because the atom bombs fell there and that vibration is still there. Similarly, any activity which is performed in any tract of land, it gives off vibrations for the rest of eternity. So India is a place where yajñas and mantras and worship was conducted for millions of years. All of those vibrations has been soaked by this soil. And it is having an effect on your consciousness at a subtle level you are not aware. And you go outside of India, you will immediately see the change in the environment. Everything is super smooth, perfectly organized, great. But you will still see an intensity in the vibration for no reason. Because the rajogun is so powerful. The tamogun is so powerful. Within the soil, that vibration is there. Of so much of sin being committed, all of that is there and you can't avoid it. Therefore, it is a challenge in India, from any city you are in India, within 2 to 3 hours, you will reach a dham. Any corner of India you may be in, any city, within 3 hours, you can touch some holy dham. So the whole India is filled with holy places. Such facility for being purified. But the question is, are you interested? If you go to Juhu area, then all the auto rickshaw drivers while taking you from Juhu will show you Amitabh Bachchan's house. This is Amitabh Bachchan's house. So that is like the dham nowadays. That is like the place for people to worship and see and appreciate. So therefore, this is a very important principle, that India is great because such environment, such facility for practicing the process of bhakti to achieve the goal of Krishna is not available in any other place in the whole universe. Therefore the question is our goal Krishna conscious? Is our goal achieving Krishna? Is our goal reaching spiritual world? Is our goal conquering over death? If that is the goal, then you will follow the process of chanting, hearing, associating, worshipping deity. And then and only then, you will really appreciate the luxurious opulence of being given such a favorable environment for practicing this process of bhakti in India. And then and only then, you will appreciate Mera Bharat Mahan. Thank you very much. So, are there any questions?
Can we request organizers to put on the lights, please? So, next 10 minutes we'll be dedicating for question answer session. Anybody who has questions, kindly raise their hand. We have cordless mic. Mic will be handed over, or you can be loud enough. So, because of limitation of time, we are restricting this to 10 minutes. Anybody has any further questions after the conclusion, the kirtans, you can personally come and get your question solved. Hare Krishna.
So, anyone has any questions, please? Yeah.
Sir, you said that by hearing, chatting, chanting and worshipping we can achieve our goal, but if we do our work properly,
achieve which goal?
Achieve the goal of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
But even if we don't chant, and for me, my work is my God.
Okay.
And even if I don't chant, but I do my work consciously and follow all the process for my work, Won't I be following the God because Lord Krishna has said, Karma Neva Dhikarasthe Ma Phaleshu Kadachana? Without chanting and worshipping, can't I follow my God, my work?
The whole conception of God is that one who is the supreme origin of everything. So whatever energy you derive for your work is coming from a certain source. So if you are calling your work God, then who is giving the energy and intelligence to do that work? So that factor is greater than the work itself. So we are worshipping that personality. So as far as your goal is concerned, depending on the process you follow, you'll reach a certain goal. So some people say work is worship. But Krishna is saying that yoga consists of four elements. Work, right? Work, renunciation, meditation. And it also consists of various other aspects like sense control, like devotion and things like that. So all of these factors put together make up what is known as yoga. So you say work is worship. Like for example, what exactly is yoga, you must try to understand. Like anyone who sings or anyone who paints is not considered an artist. Like small child in primary school, he draws something on his sketch pen, with his sketch pen or with his crayons, and then he submits to the teacher. That is just a drawing. It cannot be considered a work of art. The child's parents cannot take that sheet of paper to the art gallery and convince the organizers, put it on the display. Say, we want to put it for sale. Well, who will buy it? No, it is our child's work of love. Or it may be your child's work, but from the artist's point of view, from the art point of view, it has no standing. Right? Otherwise, if you have such big famous artists like M.F. Hussain or some other so many different artists, they make so many different paintings. And I look at it, and I went to one gentleman's house, and all kinds of strange paintings were there, and I was asking, what is this? He said, oh, this is, you know, a man who is lying down on the side and looking at the sun rising. But I don't see the man, I don't see the sun. Well, that is modern art. And how much does it cost? He said, 10,000 rupees. I said, my God, for this much? Another painting he showed, this is 51,000 rupees. This is 75,000. I was getting bewildered. Arey, what is there in this? It just looks like so many paints and as if somebody has taken paint and with anger thrown it on the canvas. So I said, you don't understand. This is all artist vision. So you need training. You need to be a connoisseur of art to understand that. So you need to be an artist to appreciate that. So when you are expert in drawing and painting, you are called an artist. So anyone can sing. You can sing, I can sing, all of us can sing. While taking bath also we sing. But that cannot be sold as CDs in the world. That bathroom singing. The world famous singer. Hear it. No, nobody will buy. That is not considered art. But suppose Bhimsen Joshi is singing all night classical and he's going into all these ragas. Hundreds of people are paying, you know, hundreds of rupees to sit and hear that. Why? Because he knows the science, the intricate science of how to manipulate sound vibration in such a way that he takes it to the level of art. I don't know what is music, I won't be able to appreciate what he's doing. That is my problem. So all these classical singers, they'll be going for a long time. And you are wondering, what happened? Is he hungry or what? ऐसे क्यों कर रहे हैं कुछ खिला दो यार प्रसाद भेज दो स्टेज पे I look at it from my point of view. That is my problem. But he is an artist. Because he has taken music to the level of art. So anyone who sings is not considered artist. Anyone who paints is not artist. Anyone can cook. You know, I take rice, dal, put together, make khichdi. So I can't sell it outside in Govinda restaurant. 100 rupees khichdi plate. Who will buy? Nobody will buy. So I need some expertise in that. So then I am called an artist, a connoisseur. He is called a chef or this or that. So many names are given. So therefore, just cooking itself is not sufficient, but you should be able to take cooking to the level of art. So anyone can cook, anyone can sing, anyone can draw and paint, but artist is something different. So similarly, anyone can work. You are working, I am working, Dawood Ibrahim is working. So you can't call them that great artist. Kya smuggler hai, wah. Artist hai. So from his point of view, in their society, they also have their tales, they also have their, discussions on how this police was chasing him and how he escaped from that and nobody could catch him. Oh, he's a great one. He's a great soul. So, they have their relative idea of who is great, according to how they work in their area. So, what is the conception of work exactly? So anyone can work, but when work is taken to the level of art, that is called yoga. So Krishna defines in the Gita, yoga karmasu kaushalam. So therefore, when work is taken to the level of art, and work is used as a means to worship the Supreme, that kind of worship we are interested in. Work is a means by which you can display your love and affection for the Supreme Lord. So Arjuna was fighting. Duryodhana was also fighting, right? So Duryodhana was fighting hard or not? Was Duryodhana lazy? Is Duryodhana criticized because he used to go for a snooze in between? That after 2-3 hours of fighting, he'll see nobody is seeing, so he'll escape from battlefield. Is Mahabharata mentioning that? Problem with Duryodhan was, he was taking too many casual leave in the 18 days of battle. Was that any accusation against Duryodhan? No. He was fighting very hard. So there is no question of Duryodhana not working hard. Is it not? So now Duryodhan is there, Arjun is there. Now for Duryodhan, was work worship or not? My only goal is to destroy these Pandavas and take over Hastinapur. That is my work. Therefore it is my worship. Therefore work is worship. So Duryodhana is one of the greatest then worshippers in that sense. Because he was so perfect in his work. But what was the problem? His work was opposed to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, he was not working to please the Supreme Lord. Therefore, that work was a hindrance. Otherwise, Duryodhan was also fighting. Arjuna was also fighting. Both were very hard-working warriors. But what was the difference? One was fighting to please the Lord, other was opposing the Lord. And therefore, we find that most people, they will not have anything to do with Duryodhan. If suppose you get a son in future, will you keep his name Duryodhan? Has anyone heard that anyone in anyone's family has kept their children's name Duryodhan or Dushasan? Why? Because they were very hardworking. They were very diligent. Astrologer has said, keep the name starting with D. And therefore we think this is a very good name. प्यार से उसको दुर्रू बुलाते हैं कोई ऐसा नाम रखेगा नहीं रखेगा सबको पता है मोस्ट पीपल डोंट नो द गीता इन डिटेल बट एवरीवन नो दुर्योधन कुछ तो गड़बड़ है नॉर्मल नहीं है वो, कहीं तो अबनॉर्मल है. अदरवाइज विदाउट अटेंडिंग गीता सेमिनार, विदाउट गोइंग थ्रू ऑल द स्टडी ऑफ गीता, विदाउट बींग भक्ति शास्त्री, स्टिल दे हैव कॉमन सेंस. दे कीप देयर चिल्ड्रन्स नेम अर्जुन, बट नोबडी कीप द नेम दुर्योधन. इवन इफ यू कॉल देम एंड कन्विंस देम, नहीं दुर्योधन रखो रखो, हटके है, अच्छा है, यूनिक नाम है, रख दो. नहीं नहीं नहीं, बाकी कुछ भी चलेगा, ये मत दो. अरे क्या प्रॉब्लम है? कुछ नहीं. अरे वो भी अच्छा एडमिनिस्ट्रेटर था भाई, क्या ऐसा थोड़ी है. वो नहीं नहीं, कुछ दूसरा नाम दे दो चलेगा, थोड़ा कम फेमस राक्षस भी होगा चलेगा. ये बहुत ज्यादा फेमस है, सब लोग जानते हैं. सो यू नो समथिंग इज रॉन्ग हियर. सो माई क्वेश्चन इज फॉर दुर्योधन, वॉज वर्क नॉट वर्शिप? Was he not working hard? If hard work was itself the criteria for being considered wonderful and great, then Jarasandha was such a hard worker. Not once, not twice, not thrice. 17 times he brought armies. Can you imagine? 17 times. And every time Krishna killed every soldier, every horse, every elephant, and every other assistant was moving in the army, except Jarasandha. Everyone was killed, massacred, not one, not two, several Akshini divisions. And he was sent again. And Balram was saying, let us kill him also. Krishna said, no. He is going and organizing all the demons together so nicely. So we just have to sit at one place and kill. One of the most difficult parts in satsang program is organizing. Crowd khada karna. To get people together, you have to do so much publicity, you have to canvass them, convince them, then only they come. But what an effective organizer Jarasandha was, that all the demons had heard that just in the previous battle which Jarasandha had led, what happened to the people who worked under Jarasandha? They knew. None of them left the battlefield alive. But still he managed to convince them, no, no, this time will be different, fight with me. What amazing convincing skills he had. And how foolish the other demons were also, that they had hope that they will survive. So that is Jarasandha's optimism. He could have given seminar on positive attitude. He would have been a millionaire. 17 times totally defeated, still full confidence. Hum honge kamyab. Ek din. And then on top of that, Shishupal is trying to kidnap Rukmini, and Krishna comes and kidnaps Rukmini, and all the other warriors are trying to fight against Krishna, and Krishna defeats them, and the warriors are discussing amongst themselves, this is Shishupal's marriage, why should we lose our life in that? So they are all discussing among themselves and they tell Jarasandha, hey, go and tell Shishupal. We have nothing to do with this. It is his affair. So Jarasandha comes to Shishupal and is saying, Bhova Purusha Shaurdalya Daurmana Sidham Chaja Na Priya Apriya Yogo. That as far as life is concerned, my dear Shishupal, life is filled with success and failure, you know. See my own example. He is telling him that tathapi aham na shochami na praharishyami karhichit kalena daiva yuktena yena vidravitam jagat. He is speaking philosophy to our Shishupal. He is saying that tathapi aham na shochami, I don't lament and I don't feel happy also. Because kalena daiva yuktena, everything is happening by time, influence of time. And just see my own example, 17 times I was defeated. But did I accept defeat? No. I was optimistic. I knew that sometime something will happen. Work is worship. Go on working. So you are working, but for what cause are you working? That is most important. If that goal is not defined, then you will follow a certain process but that may be similar to that of Duryodhana and Jarasandha and all these personalities. So therefore, Gita defines first the goal. So Krishna tells Arjuna, I'm not going to teach you some extra skills on how to fight more efficiently. I'm going to tell you the goal. Gita was not a discourse on more efficient ways of shooting arrows. Arjuna is feeling morose because he has lost confidence. Okay, I will teach him few more techniques. Few more Brahmastras I will give. And then Arjuna will feel more determined. No. Gita is not a discourse on improving skills. It is a treatise on changing attitudes. Therefore, the most important principle is, what is your attitude? What is your consciousness? Okay? So, we have some more questions? One more question, okay. Yeah. You have a mic with you? It's coming your way.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
If we do it,
Hey, Apka, that mic is not working. Yeah. Yeah. So let me clarify. The question is that, okay, death is anyway going to come, so what kind of solution are you talking about? So therefore, since anyway it is going to come, so why to take that as a path, a spirituality as a path, right? So let me clarify, death is a problem which is definitely going to come. It is inevitable. You want to add to the question or you want to give an answer? Yeah, why is death a problem? Is adding to that question. Okay, first of all, why are you calling death a problem at all? Right. So, problem, well, first of all, what is the definition of problem? Problem means, as it is defined, that suffering, that which creates suffering, something which you do not want to have but still it comes, you want to avoid but you cannot avoid. So problem means we are trying to somehow avoid it, solve it, we find it a discrepancy in our regular affairs. So all of us intuitively are fearful of death, afraid of death, and all of us are trying to postpone death. We may not be consciously doing it, but unconsciously we are doing it. And that happens in our attempts for defense. It is cold, I'm trying to wear a sweater. Why? Because I see that the body is under attack. I'm defending. If I don't see it as a problem, I should stop all defense. I see that I feel hungry, I try to fulfill that need. When I'm diseased, I go to a doctor. So I may not consciously define it as an attempt to postpone death, but unconsciously that is what it is. It translates like that. And therefore, most people may bravely, in their good health, say, I'm not afraid of death. That may be a statement of bravado. But ultimately, we are talking of a state of consciousness deep within. It is not something which people just make statements about, but what you really feel. So if someone comes with a gun or with a knife to kill you, or a sudden threatening situation, what are you genuinely going through in the core of your heart when faced with the prospect of total corporeal annihilation? So it is a subjective issue. But we have to be honest, and if we are honest and introspect within the core of our heart, we'll find that I'm not ready. I'm not ready for that moment. So that is a problem. It creates fear. The very thought creates fear. And therefore, the solution is that you achieve a state where you do not have to accept body again. That is where answer to your question comes. That right now the soul is within the body. So what is the phenomenon of death? Death means the soul leaves this body and accepts another body. So when you stop this cycle of accepting new bodies, and the soul can go to a state where he doesn't have to accept any more material bodies, that is the solution to death. So the soul is eternal. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Atma ajar amar hai. But right now it is trapped within this body. So the prisoner has two choices. He comes out of the jail. He comes out of Yeravada jail and goes to Tihar jail. That is transmigration. And he comes out of Yeravada jail and goes to the city and lives his life as a citizen. That is liberation and entering into the spiritual world. So therefore, nobody is teaching people how to stop criminal life and how to actually lead the life of a proper bona fide citizen. So therefore, the solution to death exists. The solution to death is attainment of the spiritual world. And how to do that, the whole process is described in the Gita. And Gita has remained a relevant, exciting book in spite of 5,000 years after it was first revealed. So you cannot sell millions of copies in 2000 in this age if it is not relevant. People are not so foolish. Why people are taking the Gita? Because they are still finding it relevant. Gita was spoken on battlefield of Kurukshetra. Not many battles are fought that fashion nowadays. Gita was spoken to Arjuna on a chariot. Not many people ride chariots now. Arjuna was fighting with traditional weapons of bows and arrows. Nobody uses them. So as far as time is concerned, it has changed completely. But the message which was spoken by Krishna to Arjuna is still one of the best-selling books in the whole world as of now. Why? Are crazies buying it? No. Highly intelligent people are buying the Gita because they are finding it relevant. Why relevant? Because it is providing solution to problems. Birth, old age, disease and death. It is providing solution to anxieties. Providing solution to mind control. So many practical problems we are facing, the solution is there in the Gita. Times have changed, situations have changed, personalities have changed. But the problems have remained the same. 5,000 years back, people were dying, even now they are dying. So therefore, the Gita is a book which provides solution to death. First of all, we have never ever discussed death as a problem. And so nobody has ever explained to us in our education system that a solution exists. But that doesn't mean that solution doesn't exist. So solution exists, and that is discussed in detail in the Gita. And so many intelligent people who are educated, who are coming from a scientific background, are taking to this process and accepting that death is a solvable problem. That itself should convince you that if people from engineering backgrounds, from IIT and from many other places are following this, means there must be something. So therefore, how those details fit in will need your interest over some period of time. But unless you give a serious attention to this book, you will not understand it. Therefore, again, in conclusion, death is a problem. It is a solvable problem. And the solution exists in a book. And that book is Bhagavad Gita. How it explains the solution and how the solution works, for that you need to spend more time and energy trying to understand it. So, we are very fortunate that we are here in India and we have access to this Gita, access to Bhagavatam, to all these literatures. And therefore, all we have to do is take these books seriously and apply them in our lives. People all over the world, like Einstein, used to study the Gita regularly. Oppenheimer, So many big scientists, they found it relevant. But as I said, only when your goal is fixed, you will find the other things relevant. Is it not? If your goal is to enter into IIT, then you will follow a certain process of going to some coaching classes. And nowadays people are all going to one city in Rajasthan for studying in IIT, for entering. What is that city? Kota. See, everyone knows about it. If the goal is IIT and the process is study 2 years, then everyone is looking for a certain environment, favorable environment. What is that? Kota. That has become the dham, place of pilgrimage, because environment is conducive. Everyone is studying. And all the standard books are being referred to. But if my goal is not to enter IIT, then I have nothing to do with those books. I don't find that exciting at all. So similarly, if my goal is not to go to the spiritual world, I will have nothing to do with the Gita. If I am not a software engineer, what should I do with programming of C++? That is not my goal, so I won't find the book also relevant. So therefore, again and again, we are emphasizing, become convinced of the goal. If you are convinced of the goal, you will find the need to follow a process. And automatically you will search for favorable, conducive environment for doing that. Therefore, the whole emphasis is on fixing your goal. If the goal is fixed, everything else follows automatically. So therefore, here we are in Pune, and here IYF Pune is providing such wonderful environment, culture for students who want to follow the process of Krishna consciousness. So many meetings, so many bases, so many wonderful training facilities, books are available, people are there to help you and guide you and train you. Everything is provided. All the environment is there. Everything is there, provided you want that goal. So if your goal is Krishna, then you will find this temple very exciting. So that is the whole idea. If your goal is not that, then you will not find anything relevant or exciting here. So it all depends on what your goal is. Therefore, India is great, is really mahan, because the kind of environment it provides to follow the process of bhakti to achieve the goal of the spiritual world is unparalleled. Apart from that, there are millions of reasons for which you could criticize this place. But as far as this one point is concerned, there is absolutely no way you can find fault. And no other country or no other tract of land comes anywhere near providing the kind of favorable environment as far as this goal is concerned. It is a challenge. So therefore, if you have fixed your goal, then you will really appreciate this place. And then naturally, in our own case also, after we became devotees, our appreciation for this place has increased. Because we see, oh, Mayapur is here, Vrindavan is here, I go to the west. And I met devotees in America, he's practicing bhakti for 15 years. And he couldn't collect enough money to come to India so far. And he's saying, my only goal of life before I die is once I must visit Vrindavan. Once I must visit Mayapur and see Panchatattva. That is my only desire. And people in Russia, I met, they collect money for 4 or 5 years. So that they can then finally come and visit Mayapur, visit Vrindavan. Some Russian devotees were sleeping out in Mayapur. And big mosquitoes are biting. And I was asking him, hey, why you don't take mosquito net? He's saying, I have come in the dham after meditating for so many years. And now I want these mosquitoes of the dham to suck my impure blood and purify me. I said, my God, your mood is really amazing. I'm not on that platform. But there are people all over the world who are just struggling and spending their time and going through their jobs and making money so that they can buy a ticket to India and visit Mayapur, Vrindavan. And we are sitting right here and thinking when to go to America. So, if it is for making money, definitely. The way you can make money with dollar and pounds, you can't make with rupee. But if your goal is to get Krishna, and then you will find this place great. So one student came up with a best of both the worlds option. Said, I will go for some time, then come back. I know Bharat is Mahan, but dollar is also Mahan, you know. So I will go, make some dollar, come back. What do you say? He said, yeah, I mean, it is each person has to lead his life, but you should know, based on logic and reason and Shastra, what is the facility you have at your disposal. And that is the whole purpose of this presentation, to give an appreciation for the facilities you already have. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.